The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
It's list season, baby, and we get to rank the top five Auburn wins from 2025 and 2026. It's Tuesday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Oh, we cannot continue that trend of making somebody laugh as soon as you're about to go on air. A bad trend. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you guys are doing well. This very, very warm, very hot summer afternoon. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. A whole lot to get to here this afternoon, and a really fun show set up for everybody as we continue the dog days of summer, which means we get to continue. There's talking season, and in the college football world, in the college media world, it means it's list season, and we may be a touch behind, but wanted to kind of stretch it out as far as we could get in terms of just how many lists we wanted to have. We'll obviously have the quarterback rankings, the SEC projections. We'll have our college football playoff rankings, everything on that side of things, probably post-SEC media days. So that way we can have a little bit of time to continue to dive into it, have our Auburn draft, our SEC draft as well. But wanting to look again at the entire calendar, the fiscal year of 2025 and 2026 for the Auburn Tigers and the top five wins across all of their sports. And so really excited to dive into that here on this hot Tuesday afternoon. As I mentioned, I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Welcome in my man sitting across from me in the studio, Mr. Tripp Upton. Hopefully all is well in your world, sir. I know you're a little depressed from last night, but we carry on.
Why would I ever be depressed about some silly sport that no American cares about in soccer? You know, well, let's
we didn't even want to be there.
No, let's focus on the real sports: football, basketball, baseball.
Yeah, you football know, the begins ones you, in a month. The not ones, football,
the ones you can actually win SEC championships in. Those are the only sports that matter to me personally.
So. How many SEC championships does Belgium have? Do you know? If you carry the two.
If I carry the two and apply the logarithmic function, I think I'm going to go zero.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And so take that, COVID.
Boom.
We don't even want to be there. We want to talk about football. But I feel like before we talk about American football, you do have to dive into, again, prefacing, I am not going to sit up here and act as if I am a soccer fan at heart, even though, funny enough, I have major ties to it. But I'm much more of a hand-eyed coordination more than a foot-eyed
sure.
coordination fan. And
not a feet guy.
No, no. But what happened in Atlanta earlier this afternoon was absolutely incredible. I know that many people are already considering that to be one of, if not the best World Cup games so far here this year. The fact that Egypt was up 2-0 on Argentina, they were dead in the water again at Atlanta Stadium.
Atlanta Stadium.
Not Mercedes-Benz, in no. Atlanta Stadium. But 2-0, Argentina dead in the tracks. And then they called it Messi Mania, and that's exactly what it was. Had an assist, had a goal in there as well. Argentina scores 13 or 3 goals in 13 minutes
yeah.
to spark a comeback. And watching that, again, you got to experience some of that because I tweeted out, let me remind you that this is the perfect time to tell everybody and remind everybody that Messi was inside Jordan-Hare Stadium just a month ago. Was it June 8th? So
sure, I think it was
just about.
I think it was like June 9th.
So that Tuesday. So mm-hmm. a month essentially ago from today, Messi was in Lee County in Jordan-Hare Stadium and scoring a goal, also having an assist. Pretty dang cool inside Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Pretty
and now
good.
The fact that you led a incredible comeback and one of the biggest comebacks in World Cup history, and to do so in such little time as well. You hear all about it in sports. You don't give a really solid team any sort of desperation. You don't give them any sort of hope. Don't give a desperate team any sort of revival. And that's exactly what Argentina did. You felt like Egypt was continuing to push down on the far side of the field and continue to keep their offense going. And then all of a sudden, Argentina was like, they hit that desperation mode and their defense just got absolutely exhausted, and Messi did what Messi does. And
oh, my goodness.
It was absolutely incredible. But going back to that and wrap it up, that thought of, I'm not acting as if I am a giant soccer fan at heart, but hearing the crowd pop, hearing what the stadium looked like, and we talked with Aiden yesterday with the United States Federation, the Soccer Federation, covering the men's and women's teams, and specifically with the World Cup. How his comparison that we have here in America is the closest thing to a Saturday afternoon, a Saturday evening
right.
in the fall with a top 10, top 15 matchup, a rivalry inside of a home stadium. But hearing that roar, especially after Messi was the one that scored, you begin to understand, if you haven't already, the culture and excitement that brings. And I understand the soccer mentality that we have of, well, there ain't enough points, Paul. Why are they only getting 1 point? And, you know, there's so much running, but you see the greatness, and you can respect the greatness that Argentina is and that Messi is. I mean, you feel it's just about undisputed in terms of just the world GOAT in terms of football.
Oh, 100%. Did you see the after Argentina scored the third goal, the referee just run around, giving to a card.
Red card, yellow card, yeah.
Dude, I'm sure his post-game...
Yeah, can I have another?
Yeah, his post-game report is going to be an actual bibliography of the who's of Egypt. Like, the assistant coaches got kicked out. Like, every player got a yellow card. A coach got a yellow card.
A coach got a red card, and then a few moments later, another coach got a yellow card but was holding his hands up begging for a red card. Like, it was crazy to see the frustration. All because they were trying to say that before that counterattack, there was a penalty. I think it was a slip, to be completely honest.
But it looked like he misses the ball, then he hits the ankle. I would honestly say... I thought it was in real time.
Are you talking about the tackle? Because I don't think that's what they're arguing. I think it was the one behind.
It was the one. Yeah, it was
like
the
pull down.
Yeah, he tried to put his foot around it. It looked like he tripped him, and that's how Argentina got possession. I did see one that it looked like it was. I haven't seen a clip of it. I need to go back and look for it. But yeah, I think that's what they were frustrated at. But like, honestly, more sports need to have the baseball approach of, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get tossed. As like a manager or their head coach.
Oh, you're the Bobby Cox mentality.
Legit,
of
yes.
Even if you're in the wrong or your players are in the wrong,
your
job is to protect everybody or to fire everybody up. Basketball is not necessarily I'm going to get thrown out, but it's the technical. I'm going to get a technical. I'm going to walk out on the floor. I'm going to switch the mentality. I'm going to switch the momentum. Soccer, yeah, you feel like they're at that point of, yeah, throw me out. We need something to happen here. We need some sort of mentality change, some sort of momentum change, and if that comes with being thrown out, or again, the famous Bobby Cox of, yep, even if my player was in the wrong, I'm not leaving this batter's box until you throw me out.
Right, exactly. Yes, but we head to the phone lines, and apparently someone has a bone to pick with me.
Uh-oh.
You're on the line, my friend.
Hey, Spectre.
Hey, oh, Spectre.
Goodness. Left here. I'm going to tell it like it is and hold nothing back.
I wouldn't want it any other way.
All right. I didn't grow up a soccer fan, but it's grown on me like a cancer.
Yeah,
right.
And to hear you guys downplay it like it's nothing at all, let me tell you something. Soccer is growing in this country. You can look at it when you went to Jordan-Hare Stadium when Argentina and Iceland was here.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. You know, it bottlenecks at high school. These kids have nowhere to go after high school. They play in city leagues and go down here behind Duck Stadium and play on weekends. But, you know, we need to make a movement here to get soccer at the university, and we need to do it now. I mean, if we got to start knocking on doors and getting the SEC on board, so be it. But soccer is here.
Yeah.
And kids want to play it. If you trip to downplay it and say, well, it's not my sport. I just basketball, football, and baseball, that's it. That ain't nothing else but that.
No.
Well, you know, there was a time when football was all we had. Now we got basketball and baseball. Yeah, we need to get soccer on board. Don't you guys agree?
No, Spectre, I agree with you. I was kidding, obviously, coming onto the show because, I mean, we literally all watched it. I was in here going electric for the Argentina and Egypt game, and I don't disagree with you.
We were playing the dumb card since the United States lost of acting as if we didn't care. But, no, we were all very, very tuned in and didn't mean to seriously downplay because, again, we were talking about, what happened at Jordan-Hare Stadium of even if you weren't a soccer fan going into it, you can at the very least appreciate everything that's going on and seeing the game continue to grow.
That's right. Those soccer fans were coming out of the woodwork to go to Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And same thing for what it looked like in Atlanta as well. The Argentina crowd, safe to say, they carry along with their team.
Okay, as long as USA lost, you know, you can't win everything.
No,
but
yeah.
We'd be singing a different tune if they'd have won and going to the next level.
100%.
100%. Oh, yeah, look, we'll be...
So you guys, I'm glad to hear you changed your mind there, or you were just kidding or whatever.
Playing the if Auburn comes on here and loses a football game of, you know what, we didn't want to win it anyways. Just totally taking the sarcastic route to the laughs to hide the pain.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yes, sir. You as well. Hopefully. Glad to clear that up because it was a very sarcastic tone. And
soccer is, again, I agree with him. I do think soccer needs to be big. I really wish that with the MLS and some of the other like the leagues that make up across the country, if you could do some kind of promotion and relegation. I was talking about last night of how much that American soccer would grow because of that, because I think that is the coolest thing that European soccer does. But I definitely think that soccer can grow. I agree with Spectre. I'd love to see it in the Southeastern Conference and give these athletes an opportunity to stay home and be able to showcase their talent and not have to go overseas with all of our, I don't know if any of the U.S. soccer players play in the MLS. They all play overseas.
Yeah.
I'd have to look to definitely check with that.
I think the goalie, doesn't he play for New York?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I believe I saw the post about that, but again, I respectfully couldn't tell you the for sure answer.
Right. So I think that if you could do that and keep those guys here, that would build up that sport for sure. I definitely agree with that. And not, either at the collegiate level or the professional level. But again, appreciate the call from Spectre and to say his piece because I 100% full-heartedly agree with him. I'm just sad the USA lost because I am a patriot and I love America.
Yeah,
so.
Well, the phone lines are open again for anybody that wants to be a part of today's program. 334-321-1390. Text box always open as well at 334-784-1OTL, 334-784-1685. And... already had some action in there. I'll read those over the break to get a good laugh. Not sure if I can say all of those on the air, talking about the whiff that happened with the goal and the defender who was running back and tried to play defense and missed, but and comparing that to Auburn in certain ways. But
yeah.
That may be maybe a conversation, Red, with laughs. Off the air, but
smart.
But do appreciate Spectre again for chiming in and giving your thoughts because, again, you see what's happening and you see the fact and how cool it is that the United States it was able to be a part of a host nation for this year's World Cup. I know that I believe they have already tried to submit their bid. I believe it was for 2038 get it back in the United States. And so I know that would be another thing that would be really, really cool. The only thing that I have before we take a break and we do get back to our Auburn discussion, why can't we have the guy on the sideline that stops the clock?
Yeah,
this is how soccer is played and we're not going to change the game, but I guess I understand the argument because this is something that we had all watching the game last night of but that's what makes it so cool because you don't know exactly how much time you have. yet I'd much rather just know of, okay, it's not like in football. All right, we hit the two-minute warning. You're at midfield. You have to punt. There's now 30 seconds on the clock. All right, I know there's only 30 seconds and you're at your own 10-yard line, but we're going to give you this drive to see if you can go down and score. I know it's a three-point game, but we're going to give you this entire drive to see if you can go either kick a field goal or score a touchdown to win. Just because, yeah, it's up for the referee's discretion of how much time to add. Yeah, I understand. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know the hydration breaks and everything and the injuries, but ball gets thrown out of bounds or kicked out of bounds or goes over the net or whatever the case may be. Boop. And as soon as it's kicked, boop. And just like that, look, there weren't 32 seconds added to the clock that nobody really knows how much time is going
to
be added.
Like, that's such, it adds to the drama of, like, because I disagreed. I think I like it because it is such a, you don't, once you get into that, into the stoppage time, you don't truly know.
But even in stoppage time, there's stoppage time. And that's what.
Okay, maybe.
In this game, there were 7 minutes of added time, yet they played like 13.
Yeah, no, I would be cool getting rid of extra stoppage time. I understand that, sure.
But then there's going to be the purpose delays and stuff like that.
Sure, yeah, that's the only issue with it. But, like, I don't know. There's something just so freeing about this is our last chance. We're looking over where we are. We got like a minute of stoppage time. We don't know how long. It could be 2 minutes. It could be, you know, seven, just because of what happens in the game flow. And you need a last gasp attempt at a goal. Like, there are so many videos of, like, especially in the European soccer on like promotion Sunday when it is like this is the last game of the season, and if both games, like, there's games that have come down both games in stoppage time, one team to advance and stay in the Premier League or the league, and the other one to get demoted or promoted. That's such a cool thing that no other sport has because of that stoppage time.
Yeah, I guess I'm all for if you hit the official stoppage time mark, but you have possession, it's like, okay, this is the possession right here. This is it. As long as the ball keeps going forward, you can maintain possession. But as soon as it's kicked away or as soon as the defense touches it, whatever the case may be, then it's blown dead. I don't know. I feel like there's
maybe
multiple different ways. Maybe that's just the American side of me that wants to know the exact amount rather than, oh, we could have 1 minute. You never know. We could still have 6.5 minutes that we're going to play.
Maybe. I mean, there. Like, I see the point in terms of, like, scheduling and the – they should not be stoppage time in halftime, to go to halftime. I do agree with that because they'll be like, yeah, it's actually 45 plus two, and then we reset to 45. No, put that at the end of the game. I understand that a lot more.
Ooh, okay, I see what you're saying. So play 45 minutes.
I would even say like the 45, like, I don't like that there is stoppage time.
But you could play 51 minutes in the first half, but then the second half starts at 45.
Yeah, I don't like that because I think either you put it at the end of the game or what if we came to a compromise, it is strict start stop in the first half and then the second half is you have to do some kind of stoppage time because I don't like it when it's like, what are we going to go to halftime versus when are we going to have the end of the game? I think that makes a little bit more sense.
As long as we can all agree that what the NBA Summer League and G League is working on the 2-for-1 or 3-for-1, for those that have not heard or watched any summer games, A, don't necessarily blame you, even though there are some Auburn players playing.
Oh, yeah.
That are playing really well. Dylan Carpel dunked on Chaney Johnson the other night, which was cool, but also like, damn, bro, you couldn't have just laid it in. Like, you didn't have to do that to him. But for those that have not seen it, they're trying to stop the foul baiting and the amount of free throws and the time that it takes to shoot the free throws to where they are testing, okay, I'm shooting a layup, Tripp comes in and fouls me, I don't make it. I get two free throws normally, yes, but I shoot one free throw, and if I make it, I get both points. If I miss the front end, I don't get any points. Same thing on a three-pointer. You foul me shooting a three, I only take one free throw, and if I make it, I get 3 points. If I don't, I don't get any points. So as long as we can all agree that that's dumb.
Yeah, I understand the like time-saving part of it because it does not apply. But the problem is the times when free throws take the longest, this rule doesn't apply for.
No, exactly.
It's not
the final 4 minutes
in overtime.
Yes.
It does not apply. You have to shoot every free throw. I get it. Another thing, speaking of stoppage time that I've seen that I would love to do would be, okay, those free throws, you get them at the end of the game.
I have seen that.
That is kind of cool.
To where
though.
You're shooting, you get a shooting foul, you just play on, or you don't play on, but it gets inbounded.
Yeah, sideline out of
bounds. And then there's somebody that's keeping track of how many free throws you would shoot, and
it's like the penalty kicks.
The Bucks are down 13 points, and the Heat have 6 free throws, but the Bucks have 22. And it's like, all right, you're now down 16. You got to make 17 of the 22 free throws to win it.
The environment would never mean more in like the NBA than, all right, free throw time. Like that would get crowds into a basketball game.
You talk about like the Clippers wall that they put behind one of their goals where it's built like straight up that they're trying to bring back into being sold out. Okay. Final question, because we do need to get to break. Would that be technical type of free throws to where you are the only one that's standing on that side of the floor? Or do you allow it to look like a normal free throw to where all the players can talk smack and it feels a little bit more routine?
I think you have to have them where the guards are, like behind
the three-point line?
Behind the three-point. Everyone can stand behind the three-point line.
Okay.
And you have – or you
I didn't know if you wanted it like a – like a penalty shootout to where it's just there's two guys at the free throw line and one guy is three steps to your right and he can talk as much as he wants and you're sitting there shooting free throws.
That would be kind of cool.
You go free throw for free throw.
Yeah, but like, and I'm also curious, would you have to like name a free throw shooter to go shoot? It's like, okay, you know, okay, I'm trying to think of a player. Okay, Todd Pettiford, you have to go shoot 20 free throws, or is it like a whoever's got fouled has to go shoot those free throws?
I feel like it'd have to be that. Otherwise, you're just going to put the best free throw shooter out there.
Yeah.
It'd be, Todd, you drew 3 fouls that would have turned into 5 free throws.
Mm-hmm.
You get your 5 free throws. Everybody else keeps that. Otherwise, you're almost guaranteeing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even in college now, you have 90, 92% free throw shooters. I know Kevin Overton's a fantastic one as well. Yeah, that would be a little too much, but I'd love just the mano-a-mano.
That would be kind of sick.
Two guys on the floor, everybody else at their bench or everybody else at half court, and crowd just losing their absolute minds.
That would be kind of cool.
That'd be fun to see a little change on that side of things. You never know. That's how they started the ABS Challenge. They started it in the minor leagues, and they realized it was a pretty good thing, and they moved it up to the MLB for better or for worse. I think that as much as it hurts me to say, it has been for better. But what we do need to do is take our first break here this afternoon. When we come back, we will dive into a little bit of this Auburn coverage here on this summer afternoon. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Why not? Any rule changes that you would want to see, whether that's serious, whether that's legit, or whether that's halfway joking is the ones we're bringing up. Text box is always open as well. If you want to send those our way, 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. We're back right after this here on this Tuesday afternoon on ESPN 106.7.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. March 1836. An old Spanish mission in San Antonio had become a fortress. Inside, fewer than 200 Texan defenders held their ground. Outside, thousands of soldiers under General Santa Anna surrounded them. For 13 days, the small garrison resisted. Among the defenders were James Bowie and Davy Crockett. When the final assault came before dawn, the defenders were overwhelmed, but their stand became a rallying cry. Remember the Alamo. Weeks later, Texas forces secured independence. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island. Family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on this Tuesday afternoon on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Appreciate the engagement here on this Tuesday afternoon, as well as I don't really know how we got to this point in the conversation, but diving into some of the weirdest rules or the possibilities of the weirdest rules added or taken away from their respective sports, and had a couple of texts in the on-the-line text box that we'll get to here in just a little bit. But before the bottom of the hour gets to us, we do head to the phone lines yet again here on this Tuesday afternoon. Dwight in Montgomery, how you doing on this Tuesday afternoon?
I'm doing good. You have got great callback there, Christian.
Of course.
I do want to say this to begin with. You and Tripp have done a great job of just picking the baton up and just taking the next lap.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
I mean, you really hadn't missed a step. I miss him, but y'all have done really great.
Well, I appreciate that. Hopefully you can feel the fun that we have in the studio.
Oh yeah, well that's one thing I enjoy. I can tell y'all have great rapport and I know when you're kidding and joking around and that you don't have to make everything super serious.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Here's where I come from. Basketball is my sport. That is my favorite sport. It has been since I could watch basketball being played.
Sure.
I love basketball. I love Auburn basketball more than I love Auburn football, believe it or not. The thing that has driven me crazy over the last couple of years is the increasing reviews mm-hmm. that they do in basketball. And they put these reviews in freaking 15 frames a second slow motion and maybe a hair from your arm touches somebody's chin.
Mm-hmm.
And then they flop to the ground, and you get a technical foul, or sometimes even a number two.
Yeah, the flagrant one or flagrant two.
Thrown out of the game. And I think that if you're going to do the reviews, I think all the reviews, if it's concerning hitting someone above the shoulders or the neck, I think all those should be live reviews. You could not do them in slow motion.
Sure, sure.
Because there's no telling what you can see in slow motion.
Basically taking away the nitpicky factor, right? It's the actual human involvement and the human understanding of, okay, this had intent or it did not.
And that's y'all are too young. When I was growing up, I was taught, when you got a rebound, you took the ball and put both hands on the ball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You put the ball under your chin with your elbows out like chicken wings.
Elbows out and you swing.
And you turn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that was a legal play as long as the ball was touching your body.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come loose and you wasn't. Now, if you elbowed somebody, then yes, obviously that was. But LeBron James has changed the game so much with his daggone get out there and flopping and acting like he got hit in the head when nobody's even close to him. That needs to be a technical foul. That should be reviewable.
And I think
Harden.
Yes,
James Harden changed the game.
Yeah.
Kicking his legs out and getting a 4-point play.
Well, James Harden became the guy that they had to defend without their hand. I mean, they put their hands behind their back just because his ability to swing into your arms or even grab your arms and make it look like you fouled him. I mean, now that is, as much as it sucks to say and it hurts to say because I think it hurts the game, that's almost looked at as an art now, right? The ability to draw fouls and the hook and hold. I mean, you've been able to look at that for years, but that has so much value, even if it's negative value, because it gets you to the free throw line. But I 100% agree.
I grew up with the pro teams were the Pistons, the Knicks,
oh yeah,
the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Pistons in their prime. And I mean, they would just punch you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Patrick Ewing would absolutely punch you straight in your face.
Bill Laimbeer.
They would be like, all right, don't do that again.
Yeah.
Not even a common foul.
Yeah, the warning.
And now it's gotten to the point to where if somebody gets close to you, you just fall down and roll around like the soccer players do to tie it into soccer. That's the one thing I don't like about soccer.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, you just killed me. You just killed me. But I think if they would do the reviews for that above the shoulders, head, and neck, if they would do them live, you would say, no, he didn't hit him, or he didn't hit him on purpose.
Sure.
He wasn't elbowing him. He was just turning. He got a rebound and turned around.
Yeah.
And okay, so he's 7 foot, and this guy's 6'1", and his elbow happened to hit the guy in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Well, heck, I mean, that's part of, you run into each other when you're playing basketball from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
So those two drive me crazy, and I would make it a technical on the offensive player if they flopped, and that would, you talking about saving time, people would quit falling on the ground and rolling around and asking for fouls.
Right.
And then that cuts out all the reviews.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
So, anyhow.
Yeah,
that's just what hit my mind when y'all got to talking about that.
Yeah,
you'll get me on my soapbox sometimes.
I like it. Yes, sir. Dwight, we appreciate you for calling in.
All right, fellas. We'll talk to you later.
Good to hear from you, man. And again, appreciate the kind words as well. Again, this is week 5 for us now.
Oh, yeah.
On the revamped new edition of On the Line. And we have a whole lot of fun. And based off of the youth and the sarcastic mentality that both of us have, it's made summer conversations really fun because, as you can tell, we're 33 minutes in and we have not hit our rundown quite yet. But I think that's what makes this show a whole lot of fun. I think that's what makes sports talk really fun, because you're able to relate to the casual conversations rather than just sitting there telling you everything that we feel or everything that we know, just in terms of the news that is diving into the world of athletics. And so taking away the flops and the reviews, which I do think they're cutting down on a little bit. They go,
yes,
to the coaches' reviews, and there are now flop offensive fouls.
That's, I hate the Jalen Brunson or the Trae Young, where they get the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, where they get the defender on the back, they run at the goal and then stop. Yeah, and
yes,
then it's foul. I hate that.
Yeah, like the little crab moves. Yes.
Yes.
Completely understand that. Phone lines are open all afternoon long. I want to continue this conversation. Didn't think we would, but we got some text in the On the Line text box about some rules that need to happen or some rules that need to be taken away in athletics, and we'll talk about those when we come back.
You're On the Line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes in to the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And again, appreciate all of the engagement that we've had on a very fun conversation that we thought would last like 15 minutes. And then it's like a YouTube rabbit hole that you go down at 3 a.m. to where,
yeah,
one search becomes another search, and you just start clicking on videos, and you wake up in the middle of the night and you realize that you're watching a documentary on the
history of skydiving.
Yeah. Yeah. The Gaza Strip and how deep it was and how it was what?
Nothing. I didn't know. I am someone on YouTube that just watches the most random stuff.
To where that wouldn't be too far fetched from you?
The history of skydiving video I've watched. Well, it's the video of the highest that humans have reached in the atmosphere, like the history of it. So like balloons, and then like the space jump. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, skydiving, like the space jump. Like,
and
remember when
the free fall?
Yes, it's, yeah. The history of
the dude that lost consciousness like 3 times on the way down.
Yes, that I watched a.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I got to put you on some good YouTube documentaries. I got to put you on some game here.
Well, like, yeah, you just went to your most recent search history and found.
Oh yeah,
all of those videos. That this is the equivalent for those that don't watch YouTube to go to bed of waking up at 2 a.m. with George Lopez in slow motion.
Yeah.
Do you? Yes. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Because
okay.
there was the because it happened to me, because you leave the TV on like Nickelodeon or something, and it would go to Nick at Night, and you'd wake up to bum 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum. Yes, yeah. I think I was
same type of deal.
I was probably one of the last generation of people to understand that. But no, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that that is my primary watch. I got a good, yeah. So that's, I don't watch YouTube when I go to sleep like that, but I'll watch that kind of stuff when I'm like awake.
Sure, yeah. Well, that's kind of what this show has been so far. And why have it any other way? It's been the most free-for-all Tuesday. It's kind of been a free-for-all summer, to be completely honest with you. But it's been a whole lot of fun, and we're having a good time. And as long as the listeners are as well, we're going to keep on doing what we keep on doing. And we had a couple of texts in the on-the-line text box, which you can be a part of always in the text box at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. Again, still working on getting everything changed. Hopefully, we will have everything confirmed, because I know on some of the returns, it still has the old text box line that we had to submit a couple of weeks ago before we, I guess, gosh, a month and a half ago, if not even longer, before we officially took over the program. But had to get the new text box because we realized it was, for some reason, a lot more difficult than it needed to be to keep that number. But we always invite you to be a part of it. If you have any quick hitters, any remarks, anything on that side of things, we will happily let you be a part of that. Again, 334-784-1OTL. And we were diving into some of the rule changes that we think should be made or should not be made, that need to be implemented, need to be taken away, things like that. And it started because of the conversation of Argentina and Egypt today in Atlanta, and how in soccer, you feel like there's the argument, at least with Americans, of having a guy that stops the clock if the ball goes out of bounds, and then during the hydration breaks, which are new, and during everything like that, just so you actually know exactly how long you need to play. And then that worked its way into basketball with Clay, Dwight calling in, talking about the flop rules and offensive fouls, and the cylinder rule of, okay, well, you can't swing your arms outside of your own little cylinder. And how he thinks, again, that needs to be taken away. At least if you go and review it, it needs to be in live time. And I don't disagree with that, because, yeah, you can go back and you can nitpick so many different things of, oh, man, okay, well, if you look right here, that elbow, it did go a little bit further out on the outlet pass. And so because of that, I think it was malicious. That's a flagrant one. Not only do you get the rebound taken away, but you're on the other side of the floor with them shooting free throws and getting the basketball. And it's worked its way into a multitude of different sports, which we want to read out here on the text box. Got one that said, I still think the dumbest rule is that we rely on a chain gang in college football.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to and especially when it's such a, you're trying to measure a 3D object on a 2D plane, where you look at like the example of it was Steve Spurrier. I was talking about this with someone this weekend, actually, funny enough, was about when Jadeveon Clowney, like when he blew up that Michigan quarterback, the play before,
it was the running back. What, you're talking about when the helmet came off.
The helmet came off. It might have been the running back, but
it was on the handoff.
Yes, the play before. I mean, effectively it was both, because he got their
second. Yes, and it was the most perfect ball don't lie moment of all time.
Yes, because the play before, the ball was crossed the chain, and the referee goes, or not crossed the game, it's like a foot and a half.
It was literally like four chain lengths short,
like,
and they went to the first down.
And Steve Spurrier runs in front of them on the field and is pointing at the ball. It's like, it's short. That I do agree with that. I think that in certain sports, I forget what, I think it might be in the summer league or G League, they're putting chips on the basketball to see, like, when was it touched last.
Oh, my gosh. I've been asking for that for so long in football.
Put that in football.
Put it in football from the standpoint, and I know that this is a lot of technology, but I don't think it would be that difficult, because, man, you can watch an NFL game on Prime or whatever you do, and you have all of the next-gen stats and the advanced metrics and everything, where it's like, okay, this receiver is running at 18.74653 miles per hour, and his cut radius is 47 degrees, which is 3 degrees sharper than league average. And you get like every single statistic. Baseball works that way too, with all of the TrackMans and everything with spin rate and RPMs and everything like that. But man, it wouldn't be that difficult to put a something on the bottom or on each end of the football, but then also to have something like a sensor underneath the field to where you can see exactly when something happened, like fumbles. If his knee is down, if you go back and you can look at, stupid example, but like take like a heat sensor, for example, right? When it's pressed or something, you see when it is, and it's like, okay, you can time that up and see exactly when his knee hits and if the ball was free or at the very worst, first downs and touchdowns of breaking the goal line.
If soccer can do VAR, yes, where they draw the
offsides line.
Right, like the dude's like thumb hangnail is across the line, it's an offsides.
I saw the one today for Argentina. It was literally, it looked like an ABS challenge where the ball was 0.3 inches below the zone and the call was confirmed for a ball. He was onsides by literally the ankle of the defender.
Yeah, I think the pylon cam, although I do love the invention of the pylon cam, it's not the highest.
It doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything. I've never seen a call 100 because of where the ball is snapped at the middle of the field, the furthest away from the pylons, you never see them.
Perfect example. We just got another text in the On the Line text box talking about kind of the football with the heat sensors or whatever. Talk about tennis has been doing that for years.
The Hawkeye being in and out.
And how you can go and look at that and see the ball and if it did touch the boundary line or whatever the case may be.
Like, yes, Hawkeye.
It's not.
It's called Hawkeye, which, funny,
Is that something underneath or is that above?
I believe it's cameras, and it literally, like, they zoom in, and it gets the crowd involved because they all start clapping, duh, 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 aw, or yay, whatever. And they will go to the, and they will tell you, it is 0.001 millimeters out. Apparently, I don't think they use it for every tournament either, though. That's the weird part, is that out of the four majors, there's one of them I do not believe doesn't do it, and they still use, like, the people that stand on each line.
And then the
chair umpire. Oh, yeah, dude, as someone that watches a ton of tennis when he's at home because his mom watches it and puts it on every TV, and you can't watch anything else in the household. sorry, Mom. I know you're probably listening, but that is something that football needs, where you could be, like, zoom in, because the pylon cams are just so far away, they don't get an accurate, like,
the only thing pylon cams are good for is watching touchdowns when they clearly break the plane from like 50 yards and you're just watching you're watching somebody run in or when somebody dives for it and it gets knocked over.
That's fine. Yeah, or like it's making sure he didn't step out of bounds before diving over. That stuff, great. But when I'm looking at the middle of the field, it doesn't help because, I mean, you saw it this season with Auburn and Georgia.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, when you're looking at Jackson Arnold in the goal line against Georgia, that would be the perfect one. Have some sort of laser sensor that goes from pylon to pylon and make it to where somehow
look at hockey.
Like, humans don't interact with it. But as soon as the nose of the pylon, or as soon as the nose of the football crosses the goal line, it goes off.
It's a laser gate.
And it's a touchdown. Like, or, and again, even if you couldn't see the football, but just the piles underneath where it's all just a judgment call and somebody has to go in and spot the football and you're just trusting two guys that are running in, converging on the pile on fourth and one at midfield, hoping that the answer is right here. And then we're going to spot it, but no, it was a little bit further, so we're going to move it back. And then we're going to bring two guys on that are sitting there trying to undo the chains that were messed up from the drive before. One referee is going to walk up and pick it up, and I'm going to stand on the 35-yard line and walk all the way across the field. I'm going to set it down, and then the other official is going to pick up the post, and he's going to back up until the chain tightens and set it down. And hope.
Does it add to the drama of the game a little bit when you have to?
Sure.
Sure, but
hasn't the NFL started doing it a little bit where it's like the advanced reviews on like this was a first down based off of?
I can't really there's maybe like two or three games a year where that actually matters with like the chain length and the measurement.
Sure. Again, rules that need to be changed or don't need to be changed. Another big one before we get to break is in golf for any of our golfers, ball in a divot. I think that needs to be, I don't know if it's just lift, clean, and place, but I guess that would be the one rule. If you hit the fairway 320 yards down and you just happen to land in a ball or in a divot where somebody hit from yesterday, you should not have to hit from that divot. I know that's a big rule change that a lot of people have talked about as of the last couple of years, because you see it. And I mean, it legitimately affects you because half the ball is underneath the ground.
Yeah, for sure. But we get hit to the phone lines real quickly to hope, maybe probably with another rule change with Mark, my friend. You are on the line.
Hey, how y'all doing, guys?
Doing well, Mark. How are
doing
you?
Well.
Pretty good, pretty good. Hey, I got three quick rule changes
That
just kind of drive me crazy.
Let's hear it.
One is, why does men's college basketball, why is that the only basketball that plays two halves as opposed to four quarters?
Like, sure.
Even women's college basketball
plays four
quarters.
Yeah, the 20-minute halves, sure.
Yeah, crazy. I don't understand that one. And in football, I wish college and NFL would just pick one rule. Why does, you know, college 1 foot inbounds on a catch, NFL two? Just make it two.
Okay, so you don't see the difficulty needing to be changed, like making your way from college to the NFL. I guess now that you're playing semi-professional football, anyways.
Yeah, it's all. I mean, like I said, it's semi-pro at this point anyway. So just make one rule and just have it. And the last one that really drives me nuts is the clock stoppage after a first down in college football late in the game, because these games get extended. I mean, teams are out of timeouts, but hey, if you can pick up 10 yards, we'll stop the clock for you. If we don't do that any other time in the game, why then? That's just, you know, just crazy.
No, I agree. And I think with what the conversation of, it's because they need to reset the chains. If we were to get rid of the chains, I think that rule would also go well, because you don't have to have everyone run down there. It's just referees, okay, you got to get ready, get set, and let's go.
Yeah. Yep, those are my three, though, guys. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Mark, yes, sir. Appreciate you for calling in. And again, anybody else that has any, we'd love to hear from you. I know one, sticking with the basketball side of things, it's something that I think Jacob was the one that is very outspoken about this. But if somebody fouls out in regulation and the game goes to overtime, I think you should be rewarded another foul.
Really?
In college basketball, if you foul out with your five fouls, game goes to overtime, you get a sixth foul. In basketball or in the NBA, you have six fouls. If it goes to overtime, you get a seventh foul, because it's fouling out during regulation. If there's bonus time, I think you get another foul.
I don't hate that. My foul.
Think about, was it Georgia this past year in Athens where Tahad fouled out, and that was the game that it went to overtime because of Kevin Overton, the missed free throw, able to tip in? Yeah.
Was it Murphy?
Fall in, fade away.
Yeah.
But Tahad couldn't play all of overtime, and that was ultimately a big factor.
I kind of like that. My, like, chaotic rule with ejections, and they will never do this, but I have just thought of it. Imagine if, okay, you get you're ejected on fouls, your points get taken away from the total score. Like, imagine what would happen if, like, it's like a tie game, someone gets their sixth foul. All right, your 40 points are now no longer, the game is just over at that point. They would never make that a rule. I'm not advocating for
Draymond's that. Draymond's 6 points are no longer added to the Warriors.
That would be so funny, and it would kill those late of game, like, all right, we need to foul to stop the clock, because it's like, well, if he fouls out, we lose his points, and then it's not a close game. It doesn't matter anymore. That would kind of end those. That's the only reason I like that, but they would never. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying that would be really funny. But no, I think you've talked me into that. I kind of like that now.
I like one. You get one extra foul if the game one extra foul before you foul out officially again if the game goes to overtime. We need to take a break. We need to come back. This may take all 2 hours here this afternoon, because we continue to get texts in the text box, and I want to continue to read them because we can talk about so many of them. But we will take a break. We'll come back and quickly wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Very quickly, wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. It feels very free-for-all-esque, but we would not want it any other way. Today has been an absolute blast. And who would have thought the conversation of Argentina and Egypt would have worked its way into what we love and what we don't love about soccer, with a rule change, with stopping the clock when it goes out of bounds, and worked its way throughout all of sports, and how we then just started rambling off every single rule that we don't like, we do like, we think should be implemented or don't be implemented, or should not be, rather, into the game. And had a couple of calls, had plenty of texts, and so didn't think that I would say it, but it's a conversation we're going to continue in hour number two, and we hope that you're going to be a part of it as well. 334-321-1390, the phone lines, if you want to call in, give us some rule changes that you absolutely despise or that you absolutely love. We'll read the text box as well, 334-784-1685. We'll talk about that some more before we dive into some Auburn content, I promise, in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
I didn't think I'd say it, but we continue our conversation from hour number one, talking about the best and the worst rule changes in sports.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And I feel like we usually have a little bit of a setup to hour number two and welcome everybody in and talk about what happened in hour number one, which we will do so, but feels just like a commercial break because we just get to continue right. This conversation, and we will dive into a lot of what we want to for the Auburn side of things, and this may end up being pushed for tomorrow because tomorrow will most likely look a lot like today did, just with the top five wins for Auburn sports in 2025 and 26, and we each have our own list that we would love to be able to share, yeah. Not only with one another, because we haven't looked at each other's list to see the comparison, see how many lists we have that are or games that are the exact same, but we might get to that here today. That may be tomorrow, but we do have some other Auburn news that we want to be able to dive into as well. But in hour number one, we talked nothing of what our rundown consisted of. But
literally,
we wouldn't have wanted it any other way. I appreciate, again, all of the calls, all of the texts as well. We're going to continue this just because we've had so much fun doing it, and we feel as if you guys are as well. And so a lot of hour number one, all of hour number one, consisted of the best and the worst rule changes in sports, the ones that you love, the ones that you hate, what needs to be changed, what doesn't need to be changed, or what needs to be put in place to counteract some of the issues with college sports, with professional sports, and beyond. And so, again, we appreciate all of the calls, all of the texts. The phone lines are open, all of hour number two as well, at 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. I've already had a couple of calls in hour number one, talking about some of the rule changes as well as soccer as well. But the text box always open at 334-784-1OTL. But if you did miss any of hour number one, or you catch in a little bit later and you want to go back and listen to some of the other rules that we've talked about or that our callers and texters have talked about, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com. And I usually throw it to you, but right. Anything you have before we dive into
more
the
rules?
Same conversation.
No, I mean, again, I get, like, again, you said it. It does feel weird not being like, in hour number two, we're going to talk to this person. We're going to do this, and then we're going to do this. But first, Christian, No. Look, we're going to be continuing this conversation as long as you guys want to have it. Because at the end of the day, you know, we talk about what you guys want us to talk about. And I'm having fun. Christian's having fun. It sounds like you guys are having fun.
We're having fun.
And we appreciate you guys 100%, all the kind words and all of the great suggestions you guys have. So we will continue this. And if we want to get to some Auburn content, we'll also have that as well.
Yeah, so...
Do you want to go to the text box first with some of the rule changes that they've suggested?
Yeah, I think we can work our way. So again, all of this in hour number one sparked from...
You not liking stoppage time.
Basically, talking about how awesome... the game was in Atlanta at Atlanta Stadium, a.k.a. Mercedes-Benz, of Argentina and Egypt this morning into this afternoon, where Egypt was up 2-0. Argentina scored 3 goals in 13 minutes to pull one of the best comebacks that you'll ever see, and many people calling this the best World Cup game of the season or of the year. You wouldn't complain if there are a couple more really good ones in the round of 16, and then is it just the round of eight? You can't call it the Elite Eight. Is it just the round of eight?
I think it is. No, I think it's just the quarterfinals.
Oh,
I think okay. I think they put the
quarterfinals, semifinals, and the championship.
I hate that more. Like, I assume it is the Elite Eight, the Final Four, the Sweet 16.
I consider it that for everything.
Exactly. I know it's because of copyright and legal issues. I understand that, but like,
it's like,
can everyone else get with it too?
Yeah, it's indirectly like the universal. Verbiage for there's 8 teams left, there's 4 teams left, there's 16 teams left, whatever the case may be. The round of the Sweet 76, the first round of the NCAA tournament coming up in March, and we're so excited for that right
yeah
there.
For sure.
But all of this sparked because I talked about my displeasure for stoppage time and how the clock just kept going during that, and then during hydration breaks, during penalty times, even when the floppings and the fake injuries until you hear the whistle, like, it just keeps, like, I look up at the TV and it's literally happening 6.5 minutes into the contest. Let's see. He fell at the 6:38 mark. He's still on the ground. Hold on. He's still on
the
ground.
We're going to replay.
We're at 6:53 right now and he's still on the ground. They're in the replay right now. So
maybe he could be up. He could be.
Please show him.
He
is up.
So
okay, that
seconds.
Was 22 seconds. That went on the clock of this dude laying on the ground after trying to draw a foul, which the foul was drawn. But again, you know how easy that would have been to save? I don't know. Worth the conversation. Yeah. But
and then it transitioned to the free throw rule in the G League with the Summer League.
We even talked about that. Yeah, Summer League with the
attempted free throws
of trying to stop foul baiting, which call that the College Sports Act, and then call me Auburn and Alabama, basically saying, yeah, I understand that foul baiting is an issue, but if you do this, there are plenty of other rules that that need to work its way, and this will just create more issues, because I think that will make foul baiting even worse, because you're telling me a 93% free throw shooter isn't going to try and draw more fouls because he only has to shoot one of them to shoot 2 free throws or to shoot 3 free throws. So had that, and then it just opened it up for the entire conversation of your favorite or your least favorite rules in sports. And we had the flop rule. We had offensive fouls. We had flagrants being talked about of how you can go back and review in 0.25 speed of where you're looking at frames per second to see if there was malicious intent. We had basketball with college basketball and how you play halves instead of quarters. It's the only ones that do that. I brought up if you go to overtime, you get an extra foul. Again, I think that is the JG rule that he has been very, very high on. Talked about golf, and if you land in a divot, you should be able to get free relief from that if you're in the fairway, because I don't think you should be punished by hitting a 325-yard drive down the middle, but it just happened to land where somebody hit out of yesterday. What were some of the other ones that we talked about?
The getting rid of the chain gang?
Yes, the chain gang, lasers in footballs, lasers in the end zone, all of that, and talked about how, we have that in tennis with the ball seeing if it's in or out. We have that in the World Cup right now with the VAR and how you can basically put a wall up to see if you're onsides or offsides. And if you're aglet, thanks Phineas and Ferb for showing me what an aglet is. But if your aglet is in front of the last defender, you are offsides. Speaking of, we got a text in the online text box that they think offsides, not in American football, but in hockey and soccer, should be changed. If you want to just keep a guy and you want to cherry pick, so be it. You're basically playing 9-on-10 or what is it, 11-on-10 on the remainder of the field. And if the defense wants to stop it, you go put somebody down there.
I know we talked about that last night. I that one, I don't know, because I understand the idea. However, I don't like it also doesn't apply in certain scenarios. Like if I was to just wait on the half field line and do the same thing, just touches it as high as he can go, as far as he can go. Okay. Then I'm going to run.
Sure.
Versus the, like, down the field. I understand that maybe a little bit more, but it's just such a momentum killer when you get a goal and it gets disallowed due to VAR.
Yeah.
Or in hockey. And I want your opinion on this hockey rule that the puck has to go into the net before triple zeros. Even if you shoot it and make it, if the puck is not completely past the line at the triple zero sounding, it is not a goal.
Yeah.
It's
opposite of basketball buzzer beaters, where as long as it's out of your hand. Yeah, I think
it's not on your stick.
As long as you have already cleared it of your stick. But does that change with deflections?
No, I think if it touches anything other than the back of the net, it's off. Like the game is over. But if it goes in like a slap shot, or if you get like it gets deflected off.
So it has to go from your stick if you're shooting it into the back of the net. It can't be deflected off of a teammate or anything like that.
As long as it is not past triple zeros.
That's what I'm saying. But it's like a buzzer beater in basketball. So if you shoot it, it can't be a lob essentially, even though it left your hands.
Yeah, because you can't do that. Like, yes, correct. Exactly.
We're saying the exact. We're both barking up the same tree.
Right. I was making sure you weren't saying like if you shoot it, the buzzer sounds, then it hits off of someone's shoulder and goes in. That shouldn't be a goal.
So yes, that's what. Yes, saying the exact same thing. Of if I shoot it, it cannot touch anything except the back of the net. It can't be. Well, I shot it. It just happened to be deflected into the goal. That does not count.
Correct. Yes.
Yes, I think that should be like basketball. As long as you shoot it before, because I know there's been a couple of big games that have been altered by that because the puck is like sitting half in, half out when
the clock hits
zero.
That should be a goal. It goes in the goal and you shot it on time. It should be a goal. And I don't know if that's in soccer as well. I don't know, but I guess with stoppage time, you don't really know.
Same thing, soccer and hockey. Are you a fan of the entire ball and the entire puck having to be past the line? Or is it...
Yes, because I think football is the only sport that doesn't do that. Because you look at basketball, I know with gravity, if the ball goes in the hoop, spins and goes out, that's not a basket.
Like a toilet bowl or...
Yeah, effectively, like around the world, that's what I call
sure.
it. But
or like European basketball where there's no goaltending and you can take the ball off the rim if it's sitting there.
I don't know if I like that. I understand goaltending, but if it goes in the, like, rims out, that is not a basket.
Yeah, even though a quarter of the basketball was below the rim.
Yeah, even if 99, like, yeah, as long as, yeah, if 49% of it goes below the rim and pops out, I don't know how the physics work of that. I'm not, again, not an engineer, just a sports talk radio co-host. And if it, like, that, I think that football is the only sport that doesn't, where the nose of the football can break the first blade of grass on the plane and it's a touchdown.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with the entire ball has to be the goal, past the goal. In tennis, it's if the ball hits the line anywhere, it's in. I think that for football and tennis, that makes sense. But I think for hockey and soccer, I think that the entire puck or ball needs to cross the goal.
I like it. Yeah. No, I agree. I don't think that needs to be changed, but I don't dislike the shot, as long as it has cleared your stick by the time the buzzer goes off. Another text in the on-the-line text box that we got, talking about, again, the rule changes that we love and we dislike in sports, that, or the ones that we think should be added. Again, Tripp talked about all free throws being added to the end of basketball games, and we said that one halfway jokingly, but you talk about adding a big atmosphere at the end of games. You don't shoot and ones. You don't shoot any shooting fouls until the end of the game, to where you play all 40 or all 48 minutes of real time, and then it's, okay, you have 17 free throws that you need to go shoot at the end of the game, how that would create the environment. Another one, again, from the on-the-line text box, is not a rule right now, and I have another one that I would go off of this, but intentional walks in baseball, making it to where you have to at least throw four pitches. And I know that there are clips. Is it Miguel Cabrera that hit like an RBI single on an intentional walk? I know that in softball in the College World Series, there's been home runs hit on intentional walks, but rather than just stepping into the box and the coach holding up four fingers and Chase Frelich walking his way to first base, I wouldn't dislike the rule. It's hard enough to hit and get runs and whatever the case may be. So eliminating the intentional walk, I don't know that I dislike that.
I mean, I think that it makes sense in the terms of, like, when you have an open base on first, like, that's when you're 99% of the time going to walk a guy. I mean, we've seen Barry Bonds with the bases loaded walk or the bases empty walk. But, like, if you had runners at the corners and you had to do that, effectively you're daring that to force a first baseman or the man on first tries to steal second, throws down, man on third tries to run home. You're forcing that effectively. So that's why I guess they have the four and he walks to first. But I think for 99% of cases, I do think you have to throw all four pitches.
I like that one.
Because then you run the risk of a wild pitch or a passed ball. That's your fault at that point.
Yeah. Again, it adds the implement, or just adds another element of the game. Does it take 30 more seconds? Sure, but
we've already cut the pace of play in baseball so much where we can add another maybe 30 seconds to 20% of games, because you don't see an intentional walk very, very often in today's game. It was a lot more popular back in the day when you did have to throw four pitches.
Yeah, same thing, old school versus new school baseball. Trucking the catcher. Bring trucking the catcher back.
Bring it back in major league and college. Keep it out of the game in youth sports and high school.
Sure, yes. Make it to where you still have to. I don't think there's any argument on that side where, yes, you still have to make a slide and make an attempt at avoiding, but why not?
Why not?
Bring it back.
Again, that would bring more of the fights, which always, you know, the MLB says, oh, we hate them, we're going to spend players for, but then post it on every single one of their social medias. that's a good one as well. I got a NASCAR one for you.
Ooh.
For any of our I think no, with Talladega so close, I'm not going to say I'm a NASCAR like fanatic, but I know enough to make conversation. The yellow line rule. And what the yellow line rule is it's this line on some of the turns in the super speedways or some of them, and effectively
on the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm, yes. And if you pass it, you're like disqualified. If like that pass doesn't count, you lose a race if you like pass under the yellow line. But when you get four, it's so subjective, because like you could get forced down there and then pass them.
Yeah.
And it's not and you're done. Like, you've been penalized versus a guy that blatantly does it, but does it where it's like barely, and he's like, okay, that's fine. Either make it less subjective or get rid of the yellow line rule at all. If there's anyone NASCAR that knows what I'm talking about, like, I think that is how it works. If I, you know, text the text box, call in if I'm mistaken, but I'm 99% sure that's how it works. I don't like that rule. Make racing racing again.
Yeah. Another one before we get to break, again, talking about the favorite or least favorite rules, kind of goes off of what Mark talked about with some of the football stuff. Of 2 feet versus 1 foot, but the difference in college versus the NFL of down by contact. In college football, if you fall down, you're done. In the NFL, you slip and fall, nobody's touched you, you can get back up and keep running.
Do you
like one or the other more?
I kind of like the NFL version of it, because like you think of the play, I think it was last year when Trevor Lawrence fumbles the snap, grabs it, picks it up, and runs for a touchdown, like a critical fourth down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be so cool. I mean, it would get rid of certain controversial plays like Bo Nix versus Arkansas. Was that intentional grounding? Was it a spike attempt? Was he down?
Well, that wasn't a down by contact. That was just a fumbled snap.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Texas A&M LSU 7 OT game that wouldn't have happened if Kellen Mond wasn't down. I think that they could find a happy medium there, but I think being touched down, like, it adds so much of, like, the, oh, he forgot to touch him, he gets up like Randy Moss, runs for a touchdown. That stuff is awesome.
Interesting.
What?
I had one. I was looking up the dumbest rules in sports, and it has number one as the drop third strike. If you swing and miss on a third on strike three, why should you be able to take first? I kind of disagree with it. I think it's still the job of the catcher to catch the baseball.
Well, yeah, but I don't. It just
if you swing at a breaking ball in the dirt and it pops over the catcher's head.
Sure. No. Okay.
It's still your job to. It's the pitcher's job to throw good enough pitches, and it's the catcher's job to.
That is called my road to the show frustration when I'm a catcher in the minor leagues and it can't pitch straight. And it'll be when you have to call the pitches. If you ever played MLB The Show, if you're a catcher, you can call pitches for like certain moments. And it's like, I called a fastball high.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it in the dirt? He swung at it. Now I have to go get the ball and throw it down. Or if it's like that happens and I'm on auto brand and I'm automatically going to throw to second, like just not thinking.
Sure.
And it's, oh, actually, I need to throw to first. Shoot. I understand both sides of that for sure. But I know as a baseball guy, I'm sure you definitely agree. Like, it's on the catcher's fault. I do agree with that.
Still the job of the catcher to throw it, and if you or to catch it. And if you don't, you have to make an accurate throw down to first. It's just unfortunate that sometimes you have to get four outs in an inning. We got to get the break. But we're still having a good time here this afternoon. The ground causes the fumble. Or the ground caused an incompletion, surviving the ground, I know is one. Save this for after the break. Maybe the dumbest rule in all of sports, considering where we are at technology-wise. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will finish up. We will wrap up this conversation on the other side here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, being on the line here on this Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for spending some time here with us on this very hot Tuesday afternoon. And the conversation just keeps on keeping on. And we will get to not necessarily some recruiting news in terms of Auburn gaining some new recruits, but we do have a recruiting conversation that we'll dive into here on the other side of our bottom of the hour break.
I do have a rule. I remember I saw the other day, and I thought this proposal was genius, of half the distance of the goal when you're backed up to your own goal line. Instead of having it just move the ball, like if it's a hold and you're on the 1 yard line, it backs it up half a yard. Add 10 yards to where how far you have to go. Instead of first and 10, it's first and 20 now.
Ooh, okay, I see what you're saying. So don't move the football
back half a yard.
Move
the distance to gain.
Ooh.
10 yards. I saw that and I was like, this is genius.
Okay, I was more so thinking, because
that's
like,
effectively what you're doing on the other side of goal to go, of yeah. Like, oh, you're at the 6.
It's an offsides. It's moved to the 3 rather than down to the 1.
Yeah, but like, yeah, that makes sense on the other side of things, of like trying to get closer to the goal line. Sure, I understand it. But if it is first and 10 and you're on your own 1 yard line, you shouldn't move the ball back a yard or 2.5 yards if you're on the 5 yard line. It should be, okay, now it's first and 20 or second and 13. If the penalty would take you into the end zone, you just add it on the other end.
If we're talking rules, if you have the ball at the 1 yard line and there's a hold in the end zone, it's a safety.
I know.
To where you'll take 2 points
or
rather
like
than 20 yards. But
offensive pass interference.
Sure.
If you're running like a pick play or something,
yeah,
or downfield block or something like that, don't move me back half, or like a false start. Perfect example.
Same way for, yeah, a false start would be good. I'm at the point too of, even if you're on the plus side, you're in the red zone and you're at the 7 yard line, right? 7 yards away, first and goal, call it the 7 yard line. Defense jumps off sides. Rather than moving that up 3.5 yards and putting it at the 3.5, put it at the 2. Make it it's a 5 yard penalty. Rather than half the distance, make it 5 yards if you can.
I mean, yeah, if you can, I think that's what you should do. But yeah, definitely don't be like, it's going to be, you know, a.
Because there's so many people of like, it's first and goal at the 1. We're going to try and jump the snap count because it does. Or third and goal inside the 1. We're going to jump off sides and try and jump the snap
count.
That's
what we saw in the NFL.
They can't move it anymore.
Was the one? It was the commander safety that jumped off sides 3 plays in a row.
Yeah.
And they literally had to say, like, we will give them a touchdown if you do it again.
Yeah. Which, why not? If the ball gets moved into the end zone.
Why not?
Give it it's like an own goal.
Right. Or it's, yeah. I will say, though, do like pass interference in the end zone, put you on the 1 yard line. I'm fine with that.
Ooh, that's another one. If we could talk college football, pass interference rather than being 15 yards always.
It's to the spot of the
spot.
I hate it when I'm on defense. I love it when I'm on offense.
I don't disagree with that. Or was it the Devontae Adams rule that defensive pass interference counts as receiving yards?
I do like that.
Because he got called so many times and couldn't catch the ball, and it was 50-yard passes. He was like, yeah, those should count as my receiving yards. I don't know. The worst one that we talked about, teasing going to break, having to sign your scorecard after a round in the PGA Tour. Why?
Yeah.
Dumbest rule out there. We'll talk Auburn football when we come back.
Halfway through hour number 2, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
More minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. C's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Oh, I got deflected. Looking at Switzerland and Colombia. 32 minutes into that contest. Tied 0-0. It's so weird how soccer works, and I promise we are going to get to some of our planned content here this afternoon.
I'll look at the rundown.
But, yeah, we'll open up our computers again. But the idea that you feel like in soccer, and I know that a lot of this is just based off of how the game is played and the talent levels and especially the ability of what your attack does, but you see a lot of 1-0 games, but then you've also seen a lot of the 4-3s, 3-2s. You saw 3-1 last night. But
yeah,
you either see one goal or you see desperation hit and it turns into just a slugfest. What was it the other night? It was Mexico and
England.
Yeah, that it was just like, all right, how many penalties can we take in a contest? How many cards are going to be given out? And how many goals are going to be scored? Rather than you go and you look at the game right in front of it that was expected to be the higher scoring game, and it was Holland that scored twice in like the 80th and 90th minutes, but it was expected to be a 3-2, 4-2 type of game, not in favor of Norway. So
yeah, I do love, though, I will say, you said it earlier, you said 0-0. I love that soccer calls it 0-0. I mean, 0-0 almost everywhere else. Tennis, it's love all.
Yeah.
That's such a great one. I mean, that's just like a very much a language thing. But yeah, I soccer, like if it's a 0-0 football game, I don't call it 0-0. I just know it's 0-0. I don't say that about,
not fit the game,
it
though.
It does, though.
If you said 0-0 for football, it just,
it's like how
you need something more like rugged.
Like, yeah, like I'm not going to say 0-0 or tied up, still scoreless.
Yeah.
It's 0-0 on the pitch here at Old Trafford Stadium. And,
no,
yeah.
There needs to be, for 0-0 or just scoreless. Scoreless for football works for college football, for American football. But like, give me the clean old-fashioned hate type of rivalry. Like, give me some sort of name that 0-0 you feel like just fits soccer with the finesse, I guess I should say, that soccer has, rather than the physicality, the line of scrimmage, just line
your
up my five best.
Holding versus them scoreless, not holding them to nil.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But we digress and we open up our computers for what feels like the first time this afternoon. We do want to say, and I'll say it again to end the show, a big time thank you again for everybody that keeps up with us over the summer, because not a whole lot of true content. Again, we're counting down days to SEC Media Days, less than 2 weeks until we will be there in Tampa, where we will have a whole lot to discuss that week, and that will carry us throughout July into August, where then we will have college football. And I feel like I hear the doves flying from behind me when I say that college football is almost here. Yeah, basically. But again, appreciate everybody for being here with us and for helping carry us through the dog days of summer. But we did get an article here this afternoon from Sports Illustrated that was talking about the national media and how they are very, very high on the not only the recruiting class for Auburn's 2027 roster, because when you go and you look at it, even after what? A week of silence. Gosh, I mean,
I know
it's tragic that we don't have more news. What Auburn's still a top 10 class.
Yeah.
And again, plenty of four stars, plenty of top end three stars that can easily work their way up into a four star, plenty of four stars that you have, you would fully expect to make their way to a five star level. If not, it's the five star ranking, that five star level of, okay, you have the five star plus, you have the four star plus, you feel like as well. And how nice is it that looking on the offensive side of the football, the running back room is the one that continues to get the praise from the outside media? I think it makes perfect sense. You feel like Auburn fits that conversation, is very much into the running back you conversation, just based off of what has been built. I mean, you go back and you can just sit there and name every single running back since 2000, if not, I guess that would just be the date that I was born, but even back before then. But
yeah,
it feels like there's always been the 1A who gets the majority of snaps, and then there's the younger underclassmen, the 1B, that kind of gets the 10 carries to the other running backs, 20 carries. And I don't think we're expected to see as much of that this year with Jeremiah Cobb, Nakai Davenport, and then Bryson Washington, Omar Mapson, Alvin Henderson, all in that conversation as well. I think it's going to be a much more balanced room with Byron Brown also getting carries as well. But how nice is it that even when you're in this style of NIL era and the lack of success that Auburn's had, especially on the offensive side of the football, the running back room has not been a part of that conversation. And Mycen Johnson-Cook is the one that leads the way for this running back room in 2027 that the national media says is one of the best recruiting rooms in the entire country. The four-star, again, Mycen Johnson-Cook, 6'2", 235 pounds from East St. Louis.
Yes.
He is the 78th overall player, according to 24/7. He is the fifth-ranked running back in the class of 2027 and the fourth-ranked player in Illinois. He is a commit since April 25th for the Auburn Tigers. And he is the one that I feel like him and Isaac McNeil, maybe Chance Gilbert, but those three have the highest ceiling of becoming a five-star before everything is said and done, and I think that is rightfully so. Mycen Johnson-Cook has a whole lot of excitement, and rightfully so, making his way to the Plains in 27.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I mean, you read out those physical stats, 6'2", 235. Christian Clemente, our good friend, said it on the show a couple weeks ago. That's defensive edge build, and you are going to see him just absolutely like Leonard Fournette stiff-arm dudes into the grass. I'm excited about him. And I agree with the pedigree that Auburn has had at the running back position. You look at certain guys. I was thinking about this the other day, like the top Auburn running backs of, like, when we were thinking for show ideas of, like, Trey Mason, Kerryon Johnson, Tank Bigsby, Jarquez Hunter, Cadillac Williams, and Ronnie Brown at the same time. Even looking back as far as Bo Jackson, I mean, very much a guy that was really the first and one of the biggest running backs Auburn has had in the modern-ish era. I kind of consider everything kind of post-80s as more modern. But Auburn has really done a good job at recruiting to that, even with the quote-unquote O-line struggles that Auburn has had throughout its history, with, you know, Cam Robinson being really the only guy that you look at as a, like, bona fide stud up front. They're still able to bring in fantastic running backs, and that's because of the culture, the development of, hey, if I need help and I need advice from what I should do when taking on this defensive front or in my training, I can go ask a Heisman winner in Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
I can go ask a guy that torched the record books when it mattered most in Trey Mason. I can talk to guys that did share a backfield and did work on how to manage expectations when you are a guy that maybe you're a second stringer that gets carries, kind of a guy like a Jarquez Hunter or like with Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams. You're able to turn to those guys without even leaving your own program. That is such an invaluable part of what Auburn has been able to do to recruit these running backs. And Mycen Johnson Cook, if everything pans out how it's supposed to pan out with him, and I know you can't say that as much in the NIL and the transfer portal era, he is going to be able to be another one of those guys that add to the pedigree when, even with a guy like Jeremiah Cobb still there, he can take the baton and be that 1A along with the Omar Mabsons, the Alvin Henderson. I'd have to look at Davenport and Washington's eligibility. I think they are upperclassmen, but imagine a backfield with those three as well as a guy like Kamani Williams as well to be a complimentary piece, continuing to be the tradition where if you're the tailback at Auburn, you have some sort of style and skill.
Yeah, Kamani Williams, 5'11", 205. He's not officially ranked according to 24/7, but he's the 22nd ranked running back in the class. And so you look at those two, the 4th and the 22nd, you put those two in the backfield with the guys that you already have and the guys that you're able to go and get, like a Bryson Washington, through the transfer portal. I think there continues to be a whole lot of excitement. And Spector, I know you called in, but talks about that offensive line, of how that is going to be a big part of what everything looks like for the future. Obviously, having a running quarterback helps with that a little bit, makes it to where the offensive line doesn't have to hold their individual assignment for as long, but you get behind a really good offensive line, that makes it to where, man, running backs are going to want to continue to play for you. Looking at sticking with Mycen Johnson Cook here for just a moment. Again, 6'2", 235. I wanted to look at some of the biggest running backs in the NFL. And obviously, guys like Derrick Henry are the ones that you think of. He is 6'2", 250. And so the idea that Mycen Johnson Cook is the same height and 15 pounds lighter than current Derrick Henry in the NFL, you feel like that raises some eyes. You look at Saquon Barkley, who is 6 foot 230, right around that same type of build that you expect Johnson Cook to be. You look at Josh Jacobs, who is 5'10, 223. You look at a guy like Jonathan Taylor, who I think is on the shorter end, yeah, 5'10", 226. But they all hit that weight of 220-plus in the NFL that you feel like you have to be. The fact that Mycen Johnson Cook's already at that, he's not even at Auburn yet, where they're going to get him bigger and faster and stronger and become a just an absolute monster in the weight room. I mean, you talk about just a guy who has the prototypical type of build. I am not comparing him to those types of names in terms of overall talent, because I think that's a little bit of a disgrace, because one guy's in the NFL, one guy's a senior in high school, or about to be a senior in high school. Yet that being said, the pedigree, the physical traits are there if everything could be panned out, as you mentioned, when you wake your way to the college level.
Yeah, and you know, another thing about Johnson Cook's size, at 225, do you want to know how much he weighed the same as a guy like Peyton Barber? But imagine him 3 inches taller. That is an absolute force to be reckoned with. And I do want to say, I said Cam Robinson earlier, he played at Alabama. Greg Robinson played at Auburn. I may double check that. But, you know, no, I agree with both those guys being, with, you said, top 25 guys in the country. You're getting both of those. And even if with the 5-5, I guess you can't say like one will redshirt, one of them will play.
Mm-hmm.
They're both going to need snaps right away. It helps out your current guys, your Alvin Henderson's, your Omar Mabsons, if they were just bringing a transfer running back, your Bryson Washington's, of bringing them in and saying, okay, instead of in the modern era of college football, where you don't see a lot of guys outside of your Ashton Gentes, your Cam Scatabos, of we're going to need you to carry the ball 30 times today and just go win us a football game.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of, let's get 15 for our starter, maybe 20, 23, and then our backups each kind of have like eight apiece and kind of rotate between situation of like a third down back. Okay, we need, we're going to go heavy. We're going to go a guy like Omar Mabson that can run through contact. We need to go more of a speed. Jeremiah Cobb, you're going to stay in the game. A receiving back, you'll be able to build a running back room where you've seen that work at the next level with like the San Francisco 49ers and their running back room. That's taking over the NFL. Like Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery and my Detroit Lions, you've seen that.
Not anymore.
We have Isaiah Pacheco, who arguably fits the exact same role as David Montgomery of running angry. But no, it is the same. Like, if you can bring that to the college game, that is going to be really, really impactful and help not only guys get to the next level, but also improve while they're still at Auburn and win football games.
Yeah, it's the longevity that you talk about. And you go look at some of the top programs in the country and you see a two running back system, right? I mean, you look at Notre Dame. You look at, yes, you had Fernando Mendoza at Indiana, but you had a two-headed running back, if not a three-headed running back, to where it's just you're improving the longevity. You're making it to where, as you mentioned, it's not – old school football anymore where one running back needs 28 to 30 carries every single game. If you can get it to where your number one has 15 to 18, 20 depending on who you play. If you're playing Baylor, yeah, you don't need to throw the football. Just pound and ground or ground and pound and just dominate the run game like you did last year. But make it to where your 1A can get 15 to 18 carries. Your running back 2 can get 10 carries. Your running back 3 can still be in there for 3 or 4, but can also catch out of the backfield. And in an Alex Golish offense, you have a big physical quarterback. Man, half the time, third and goal, it's not going to be get to your pounding, your ground and pound running back. It's give the ball to Byron Brown, let him lower his shoulder and give him 10 carries a game. I know that that number seems a little bit high. You feel like as a running quarterback in today's age, you almost want the 6 to 8. If you need to get to 10, that's one thing. But just keeping a defense honest on the zone reads or the quarterback options of knowing that he can tuck in and run, you feel like Byron Brown's perfectly fine with running the ball 15 times a game if needed. And so, again, Alex Golish said that he wants to run the you-know-what out of the football. I think when you look at what he has on the roster and Byron Brown, you also look at what he has coming to the Plains in 2027 with Mason Johnson-Cook and Kamani Williams. I don't think that mentality changes.
No, and to give some more love to Kamani Williams, dude is a track athlete. He's going to be your guy that if you can get him the ball out in space, if he can go north-south, he is going to be hard to stop. Runs an 11.03 100-meter dash. So that is that's
so
pretty
fast. Halfway decent.
Halfway decent.
At 5'11", 205.
Yeah.
This is not
5'10", 160. That's literally Trey Mason's build in terms of height and weight near.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a guy that if he gets north and south, it's going to be a very hard chasing him down or closing field on Williams. So it's a good complementary style where in 2 or 3 years, you could see these two both being kind of the Thunder and Lightning, the Reggie Bush and Lindale White, I believe, one's going to be our short yardage guy and our bell cow, and the other one, the second you adjust the one, we're going to put in the other one, and it's going to just create more opportunities for this offense to roll.
Give me a Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams type
same
of,
thing.
Of 1-2 punch, and again, I think Alex Golish has something like that that he can work with on campus right now, and then again, what you can continue to work with in the future. Did get a text on the line text box on the way out of here with what we started the conversation. Instead of 0-0, a really nice way of making it seem really competitive and really physical, Billion Beauregard said, goose egg to goose egg in football. What
yes.
better way? I mean, that I will use that in the first drive of Lee Scott Academy's football season.
Yeah.
It is goose egg to goose egg, and that'll fire people up.
Well, I mean, you do realize that the second that Glenwood steps into Lee Scott, the Warriors are going to run the opening kickoff back. You know that, right? Like, you're not going to have an opportunity to say that now.
Darn, I would hate that.
You'd hate that so much.
If Lee Scott
look at me
the
being mature, not
back.
Making a negative Lee Scott Glenwood joke. I'm bought into.
Yeah,
Coach
did you hear
Oz
that, Trey?
Warriors.
He's bought in
I'm
the
bought
right
in.
Way now. He's bought in the way that he needs to be bought in. We'll take a break here on this Tuesday afternoon. We'll come back and wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and for being a part of the show as well. Man, it's so much fun to be able to engage with everybody that listens in and is a part of the show. Again, we consider you guys, just as much of a part of the show as we do. And so appreciate the phone calls, appreciate all of the text, all of the opinions, everything that we're able to get every single day. It makes our job so, so much fun and shows that indirectly we're doing a good job. And so hopefully we're able to reciprocate that, bringing you some good radio here this afternoon. And we greatly appreciate, all of the texts, all of the phone calls here this afternoon, because it was a very, very fun show, the free-for-all type of Tuesday, free-for-all summer here on the line on ESPN 106.7, talking all things rule changes that we like, that we dislike, what needs to be changed, what doesn't need to change, all sorts of conversations and the way that could go. And one complaint worked into another, into another, into another, and then we found a fix, then we didn't find a fix, and it just continued to work its way for a long time here this afternoon. But we will dive into a lot of what we missed today here tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be a very, very fun show, and we hope that tomorrow is just as engaging, talking about Auburn's top five wins in 2025 and 26. This is regardless of the sport, regardless of the occasion. We have our top five list that we will be able to dive into. You can take that in any sort of route, whether that's a program building win, whether that is just from the fan perspective as well. And so that'll be a lot of what tomorrow's show consists of. We'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 joining us as well, talking about some expectations for media days, as well as a question on the Auburn-Alabama joint statement, if Georgia is in on that as well. And so should be a really fun show tomorrow afternoon as well.
Yeah, today's show is the definition of you can't miss one, because it was so much fun today. And you're never going to see that anywhere else. And so we appreciate the support, and make sure to tune in tomorrow, which hopefully will be a little bit more structured, but we're still going to have just as much fun.
You never know.
You never know. That's why you have to tune in every day.
You never know. We weren't planning on talking about a lot of what we talked about this afternoon, but wouldn't want it any other way. Here's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Everybody's opinions are better with sports, and we got a whole lot of them here this afternoon. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.